In reality television, the people are represented by two separate but equally obsessed attorneys. This is their podcast.
Hi, I'm Ceci.
And I'm Angela.
And this is the Bravo Docket.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Guys, the time has finally come to watch Vanderpump Villa. And Angela and I have been so excited to watch it since we heard that they were casting people to go to her villa and experience this luxury vacation. It's going to be good.
For those who don't know, Vanderpump Villa is Lisa Vanderpump hosting luxury travelers at her villa called Chateau Rosabel in the French countryside. So we're going to get the drama from people going and staying at her chateau. And we're going to get the drama from the staff behind the scenes, and you know it's going to be good. They're going to be living together, working together, playing together 24/7.
We know our Bravo Docket listeners are going to love this because we know that you all like the finer things in life because you're listening to our podcast. So this is perfect for all of you listening because Lisa's staff is going to try and provide once-in-a-lifetime experiences for the guests staying at Lisa's chateau, all the while trying to meet Lisa Vanderpump's high standards. And you all know Lisa Vanderpump has high standards. That is a high bar.
Watch new episodes of Vanderpump Villa every Monday, now on Hulu.
In reality television, the people are represented by two separate but equally obsessed attorneys. This is their podcast.
Hi, I'm Ceci.
And I'm Angela.
And this is the Bravo Docket.
All right, welcome back to the Bravo Docket. I guess since we last recorded, something cool came out related to the Real Housewives of Salt Lake City. You know what I'm talking about.
Yes, the preview of the first few minutes where it shows Jen Shah in the party bus telling them very calmly to turn her mic off so that she can get out and get arrested by federal agents.
Yeah, but she wasn't exiting to be arrested by them. She was exiting to get in a car and get the heck out of there.
Yeah. But then we see, like, it shows federal agents showing up being like, we're looking for Jen Shah. At the bus where they were all getting ready to go on their trip to wherever it is they were going. And then the first few minutes of that is just like, wow, I can't believe they got
the arrest.
It's like they're giving us a present.
Yep. It's on film. Thank God. Yeah. It's so juicy. And, you know, they show her like talking to, I think, Coach Shaw on the phone and him being like, you got to go, I think. Like, just from context clues, that's what happened. And then she gets in a car. So I thought that was so good. So good. I can't wait.
I mean, I haven't seen, like, I wonder if Coach Shaw is going to appear on the season. Like, they haven't shown any clips of him or anything. She's talking about how he was filing for divorce, but I mean.
I'm surprised that we haven't seen a divorce filing at all.
Yeah, I know.
I thought that would be next. Maybe it's coming.
It's just, and then her tagline, the only thing I'm guilty of is being fabulous. Is that what it is? It's something like that.
Yeah, that's awful.
It's so bad. And she's posting things on Instagram, like with like Erica and then like a picture of her or it's like, hold my drink. It's like, what are you doing?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. That's going to be in an opening slide at a trial. That's like, yeah, that's what I would open with that and be like, this is who we're dealing with.
Well, it looks to me like she is threatening someone she believes is a potential witness. She thinks Meredith tipped off the feds and it looks like she's threatening her.
Oh, you mean in the trailer?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Really, really bad look.
Mm-hmm.
You don't want to behave that way while you're indicted. Yeah. For, but anyway, yeah, really bad. But that was like, it's like we got an early Christmas present. I was just so excited to watch it. I couldn't believe it was, it exceeded expectations for sure.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I guess when this comes out, the first episode will already have aired. So if you're listening on Monday, it aired yesterday.
Oh, that's right. Yeah. Cause it comes out Sunday night.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I guess, do you want to share any thoughts on Beverly Hills since there's been a lot going on in that show as well?
Well, I have to say, after watching the last episode of Beverly Hills, which was the follow-up to the Dinner Party from Hell Part 2, I mean, so far my favorite thing has been the Watch What Crappens mashup of Beetlejuice and that dinner party. I mean, that made me so happy. But I have to say, I did a Instagram story where I did a fantasy cross-examination of Erica. And after watching her behavior, I've only been inspired to do more. So we post those on our Instagram and they are pretty entertaining. And I encourage you to go look at that because I will be posting more of them. I thought her behavior towards Sutton was deplorable.
Mm-hmm.
Also, who is she threatening? Who is she threatening? I mean,
but also, what are you threatening with? And someone asked me as well when she was like, Tom's going to sue you. They were like, what would she sue that Sutton for?
Nothing.
Like, nothing. Yeah.
Sutton is allowed to have an opinion as to whether or not someone is being truthful or honest. And she's allowed to point out inconsistencies in stories. That's not a thing. Also, Erica was literally just telling everyone how Tom needs to give up his bar card. And like they're in Palm Springs or whatever, and like how he needs to give up his bar card and how he's mentally in decline and suffering from dementia. So,
right. Yeah. Talking about someone's medical health is not something you can sue someone over.
I did not get what she was talking about because it's like she was acting like Sutton went in and got medical records and like violated HIPAA or something.
Exactly. Like, yeah. She's not violating HIPAA.
It's Erica's the one saying these things. And then also saying contradictory things. And then, it's like Sutton isn't saying anything that hasn't been in the news media. I was also surprised at how much I was siding with PK. I'm like, how is PK the one that's getting all of this right? Like, PK is like,
I know.
No. It's making me think that when they used Boy George in The Housewife and the Hustler, that PK did facilitate that.
Probably. Yeah, he's right on the money. So today, what are we talking about?
We are doing part two of our Teresa and Joe Giudice episodes where we're going into and explaining all of the federal charges. In our first episode, we went in and explained the background. We talked about when they first got married. We talked about the birth of the children. I downloaded Teresa's book. I paid for it. You guys are welcome. I did it so that you don't have to. We talked about her getting cast on The Real Housewives of New Jersey and that process, and then went into the bankruptcy. And Ceci, do you want to go in and give us some of the mistakes that were made in the bankruptcy so far? Just a little recap of that.
Yeah, I guess to recap, because it led to the federal criminal charges. So they made, I believe, a total of 3 amendments to their financial disclosures. And that's where they were supposed to put their ownership interests, creditors that they owed money to, you know, like how much cash they had on hand, what employers they worked for, any extra money that they had, all of their assets. And for whatever reason, every time they filed it, they left something off. And the trustee kept flagging it for them and being like, this is wrong. Can you amend it again? And they kept amending it. And every time they left something off. And even after the last amendment, they still left off that Teresa had a book deal, which, as we pointed out the last time, was probably the thing that should have been most top of mind to Teresa because she had just signed it before they filed for bankruptcy. And for whatever reason, she left it off. And so that, I think, pissed off the trustee. And they were like, and she was like, I don't know if the trustee's a male or female. I don't know why I'm assuming she's a female. But the trustee was like, you know, I'm not okay with discharging some of the amounts that are owed to creditors because you're lying. You're intentionally lying. You're knowingly lying about your assets to me. So screw you. You're being fraudulent.
Yes. And then because of, in our first episode, we talked about the lawsuit with Joe's former business partner, who's also, his name was Joe, but it's Joe Mastropole, and how it was proven in civil court that Joe Giudice had forged signatures and forged the discharge of a mortgage in deed records, and that they owed money for that, and then filed for bankruptcy immediately so that Joe Mastropole couldn't collect on that. That all of those, he filed an adversary petition in the bankruptcy as well. So the trustee had to be on high alert from the very beginning with this court document saying this had been forged and they owe money for this. So that was going to alert the trustee right away. It would make, if I got a case like that, I'd be like, okay, so definitely going to double check everything and make sure they actually signed it. And then it ended up turning out that they didn't actually file tax returns for years. Mm-hmm. And those were forged.
Right. Yeah. So Teresa and Joe submitted tax returns, I think from 2006 to 2008. So three years of tax returns. Being like, oh yeah, this is what we filed each year. And then the trustee was like, you never even filed these. What the heck?
I mean, that's so bad. That's so bad. Mm-hmm. I do want to point out one thing. So Adriana is born, and then a month later is when the Giudices file for bankruptcy. So I would say we've seen Teresa on TV for years now. In addition to Teresa's natural sort of lack of interest in paperwork, I would say having given birth to a baby 1 month before you file for bankruptcy would also, I think, be reasonable if she had left some things off, right? I think even the trustee would have been like, okay, I get it, whatever. I mean, I have friends, and it's like giving birth is like getting hit by a car. Like, you do not feel good, and then you have an infant to take care of, and you're tired and everything else. But the fact that it just kept happening over and over again, I mean, they were given so many chances to get that stuff right. Mm-hmm. And it just wasn't.
Right. So many chances. And not only did they not get it right, then they made up stuff. They were like, yeah, we're going to omit some things and we're going to lie to you. So just very messy, bad all around.
Right. Okay. So we're at September 2nd, 2010. The trustee files an adversary petition, and that document's pretty much the roadmap for the federal indictment. They go through some other things and where they're amending stuff. But then by March 24th, 2011, not that long after the adversary petition's filed by the trustee, their bankruptcy attorney receives what had to be a terrifying fax from the U.S. Attorney's Office, which says that upon information and belief that pursuant to our telephone conversations yesterday and today, I'm writing to advise you that Teresa and Giuseppe Giudice are targets of a federal grand jury investigation concerning allegations of mortgage fraud and bankruptcy fraud. And then it's being conducted by the U.S. Attorney's Office in the District of New Jersey, the IRS, the Federal Deposit Insurance Corporation, and the Office of the Inspector General. So the U.S. Attorney's Office calls the bankruptcy attorney and is like, and which is, by the way, is basically saying look, we are investigating your clients, then sends paperwork the next day to follow up and say, we are investigating your clients for fraud. So it's like, at that point, you better get your stuff right. That's got to be the most terrifying thing to get, that you have all these agencies, federal agencies investigating you for federal fraud. It's bad. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Can I step back a second to the objection that the trustee filed, just to explain what it is? Teresa and Joe owed creditors a lot of money in the bankruptcy. And in a bankruptcy, you can have some of the liabilities discharged, and that's ordered by the judge based on certain factors and whatnot. And so the trustee filed this objection to discharge, saying, because there is fraud here, because they lied to me, because they made false statements under oath in their accounts and in their disclosures, I don't think that some of these liabilities should be discharged. And so that's the petition that she filed, essentially. That's what it was. So basically calling it out before the judge to be like, they shouldn't be discharged from paying back creditors because they've done X, Y, and Z, like Angela talked about at the beginning of this episode.
And so to kind of put this in context with the Girardi cases, which are in bankruptcy right now. This just further illustrates the fact that Erica is going to have to be completely honest about everything she owns and everything she has, all of her debts, all of her sources of income, or else you can get federal charges for bankruptcy fraud, which are bad, mm-hmm. right? Like, she's going to have to do all the same stuff and be honest about it.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, lucky for Tom, he doesn't have to do it. And like we talked about last time, the trustee just did it for him because he's
incompetent.
Incompetent. Yeah. But anyway, back to the facts. I would be so scared if that landed on my doorstep.
So this, and it's called a target letter. So this, going back to the letter from the U.S. Attorney's Office. And so it says, by way of this letter, that's the U.S. Attorney, I seek to afford Teresa and Giuseppe Giudice the opportunity to contact this office to discuss these allegations before criminal charges are initiated against them. Please let me know if you have any questions you'd like to discuss this matter further. Let me just tell you, if you get a letter like this from a U.S. attorney, the best thing you can do is go be honest immediately. Like, get your own attorney, tell your attorney everything that happened, and then have your attorney help you work out a deal. If you have lied and committed federal crimes, the best thing you can do is cop to it immediately, because if the U.S. attorney is already contacting you about it, they already know what you did. And they're going to prove it. So, like,
yeah. So I guess you can, like, plead out before they file anything, or how would that work? Like, in the court?
You would go, I mean, possibly they could have gone and said, we made a terrible mistake. We feel terrible. Like, we're not, like, we want to pay all the restitution. Tell us how we can make this right now, and possibly have avoided, they could have maybe gotten civil fine, like, possibly have avoided criminal charges and done all of that. If they had gone and said, yes, we did these things. Also, here's like three other things that we did that we shouldn't have done. Here's like how we're going to pay it back, and we're never going to do anything like this again. And maybe if they'd even gone and like paid some of the stuff back, or, you know what I mean, on their own voluntarily to show, hey, we're not going to, we have seen the error of our ways and we are terrified and we don't want to make these mistakes ever again. That is not what they did. Mm-hmm. So, yeah. But if the feds are contacting you about something and giving you the chance, I mean, they already know what you did. Like, mm-hmm. they're clearly willing to tip you off on the fact that they're watching you. So they already know what you did. So, mm-hmm. like, it's, you're almost always better to cooperate and say you're sorry immediately. But that's not what they do. In September, Teresa and Joe renew their vows, the dreaded vow renewal, and then they abandon their bankruptcy filing. And he pleads his Fifth Amendment rights. And Ceci, do you want to give a little explanation of what Fifth Amendment rights are in the United States?
Yeah, I guess you have the right to not incriminate yourself in a proceeding.
Yeah, that's literally almost exactly what the Constitution says. You have the right to not incriminate yourself in a proceeding where you could suffer the deprivation of life, liberty, or property. And we have that right in the United States based off of some British courts that did not give you that right, where they pretty much just forced you to testify about yourself. So he does eventually plead the Fifth, but by then it's pretty much too late. One, like we said, the feds already knew what he was doing. And two, he had already given depositions in the bankruptcy case admitting to not disclosing assets, and he had already incriminated himself really bad at that point. Mm-hmm. So
didn't they both?
Teresa, from what I understand, Teresa didn't, she did incriminate herself about not disclosing the book deal, but I still feel like Teresa just didn't understand that she had to like mm-hmm. tell the bankruptcy court everything. Like, I believe that she was not super cognizant of like how bad this was going to be for her. And then it's not like she was hiding it. She was like, you know, running around doing press appearances for her book. And it was her whole storyline that season. So she wasn't hiding it. So it's just like, it's almost, it's like, it's, it's just difficult to believe that she thought that she could intentionally not put that information down and then be on a very popular television show with a book deal as like one of her main storylines. I don't know. What do you think?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I don't know how someone could not put it down unless they didn't know. So yeah, I agree with you. Like, maybe she thought because it was just a deal and not like, I don't know, she hadn't gotten the check yet. Or I don't know, maybe there was some like weird disconnect in her head.
I can see that actually, because the contract is dated before the bankruptcy filing, like the week before the bankruptcy filing, but she doesn't sign it until like a month after the bankruptcy filing.
Yeah, so maybe she thought like everything before is what counted and everything she got like after bankruptcy.
Being like, well, I don't have the money yet, so it doesn't count. Like, I can see her thinking that, perhaps. Because she definitely wasn't trying to hide it. However, at a certain point, she should have updated that without the trustee having to...
After being, like, told two times by the trustee to update it, she probably should have gotten the hint.
Yeah.
Going back to the Fifth Amendment right, I always thought it was interesting that you can... you know, plead your Fifth Amendment. You just say like, you know, I plead my fifth or whatever. Doesn't that kind of signal to people that you were involved in something criminal? Do you know what I mean?
I have to answer this as an attorney. Because I'm an attorney and because I've prosecuted crimes and defended crimes, if somebody decides not to testify on their own behalf, like in a trial, I just think they're smart. And they're listening to their attorney. Mm-hmm. When someone chooses to not incriminate themselves, like in a congressional hearing, or I feel like it does kind of signal that obviously you feel like you could say something that could get yourself in trouble. I don't know. I have a hard time. I'm trying to disassociate right now. But usually when people do that, I'm like, you're being smart and you're listening to your attorney. So I can't disassociate from that right now. Like, I'm trying to, but I can't. I'm like, no, you're doing the right thing. You're listening to your attorney. Because even if you didn't do anything wrong, most people...
It could be used against you.
It could be used against you. Like, so you could say something that could be used against you. So it's almost always smarter to just shut the hell up in a lot of situations, not just ones where you're accused of crimes.
Yeah, like when you get arrested and your contacts are dry, just shut up.
Yeah, just zip it. But it's so hard for people, because even I mean, think about of all like the true crime stuff that you've watched or true crime podcasts you listen to where the wrong person is convicted and they get called in for questioning and they are like, well, I didn't do anything wrong. But if I don't talk to the police, then they're going to think I did something wrong. So I'm going to talk to them. And then they end up like saying something that's incriminating, even though they're innocent. Like, you know, like it helps the police build a case against them, even though they're actually innocent or are, you know, proved innocent later. So it's always like, it's just, I think people are showing self-restraint and then an awareness of how these things can work when they don't say anything. And I respect that so much that I'm like, you're being smart.
Yeah. I guess like if Joe hadn't pled the fifth, he would have just given them another piece of evidence to use.
He shouldn't. I mean, we're going to talk about the legal malpractice suit, I think in part three that Teresa files against the bankruptcy attorney. But, like, it is amazing to me that the bankruptcy attorney didn't get, like, sort of keyed in that, like, this isn't making sense. Like, these things aren't adding up or they're not giving me all the information to the point to where he's, like, didn't advise them, be like, this is bad. You need to stop talking and withdraw this, or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
But we'll talk about that later. But also, I'm sure I'm 100% positive. Well, I guess I'm 99% positive that when Joe Giudice responded to his bankruptcy attorney's request for his tax returns, that Joe didn't say, well, here, I didn't file these and they're fake.
Right.
But here you go. You know, it's like.
Yeah. He was trying to pull a fast one.
I mean, he had gotten away with it apparently like before. I mean, he didn't get criminal charges for when he filed the fraudulent discharge of the mortgage that he got sued for. So. I guess maybe he just thought he could get away with it.
I'm telling you the balls on that guy.
I mean, it's like, when I was signing like my mortgage paperwork, I was like terrified because I'm like, well, what if there's something wrong on here? Because I know I'm going to be on the hook. And I'm like exhausted from the entire process. And
right.
You know, but so yeah. I was terrified. Like what if, because it's like, you know, I know that if there's something in there that's not correct, even if it's the bank that put the wrong information in there, I'm still on the hook for it because I'm the one signing it saying, yes, this is correct. So
I get like freaked out when like I had to change my tax withholdings because now I'm in another state. I get freaked out even doing that. And that's not even that big of a deal.
I know.
Like, I'm like, am I one? Am I zero? Am I two? I have a dog. I don't know. And like,
we're literally attorneys who are good at paperwork and we're afraid.
Right. They're going to come after me. So, yeah, the fact that he did that is, oh, God.
Yeah.
Entertaining for us, but so it's dumb.
It's, yeah. All right. So September 2011, they abandoned their bankruptcy filings, which means like they're not asking for like a discharge of their debts anymore. Then 2012, that's when Joe calls Teresa the C word, and I don't mean charming, and says, here comes my B wife. That's also the year that Teresa is on Celebrity Apprentice 5 and when she meets Donald Trump. So then we get into 2013. I'm going to say what the charges are, and then Ceci's going to explain like what they mean. So on July 29, 2013, Teresa and Joe are charged with conspiracy to commit mail fraud, wire fraud, and bank fraud, and making false statements on loan applications, and bankruptcy fraud in a 39-count indictment. The indictment also charged Joe with failure to file tax returns from 2004 to 2008. So, Ceci, what is mail fraud?
Yeah. Okay. So they were charged with conspiracy to commit mail fraud. And we've talked about conspiracy before in the Jen Shah context. But the essential elements of conspiracy to commit mail fraud or wire fraud is an agreement by two or more persons to commit mail fraud or wire fraud, an overt act committed by one of the conspirators in furtherance of the conspiracy. So that's the conspiracy part. And then I was like, okay, but what is mail fraud? And mail fraud, there are two elements: having devised or intending to devise a scheme to defraud, use of the mail for the purpose of executing or attempting to execute the scheme. So another way to put it, it's a scheme to defraud and then mailing a letter or mailing anything using the U.S. Postal Service. I had no idea that's what mail fraud was, that you literally just have to mail something and suddenly it's mail fraud.
Yeah.
It makes sense. It makes sense. But
you're using federal resources in a federal agency to perpetuate whatever fraudulent scheme you're doing. And it can literally just be, oh, I'm sending in my completed loan application through the mail or whatever. That's fraudulent.
And that's exactly what happened here. Like they sent some materials for their loan applications via the mail. And that is mail fraud.
Yep. And so the conspiracy part, and this is really what I think gets Teresa, even though she maybe had some plausible deniability, it's just that two people agreed to do something and then one person commits an overt act. So even though I think, as we'll talk about later with some of the facts, Joe was the one committing more of the overt acts, it's still a conspiracy because the federal government is claiming that Teresa and Joe agreed that this is what we're going to do. So even though Teresa didn't do all of the specific overt acts, didn't sign everything or whatever, she's still in the conspiracy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Can I explain what some of the scheme is that they put in the indictment? Okay.
Yes.
So they say that from 2001, and we explained this kind of earlier, but from 2001 to 2008, they conspired to defraud lenders and obtain money from them under false pretenses. It was primarily mortgage loan applications with false information indicating they were employed and making substantial salaries when they weren't. So, for example, in one of the loan applications, they said that Teresa was an executive assistant by Modern Era Investment Corp and was making a salary of $3,750 a month and was with them for 4 years when she wasn't. So they submitted fake W-2 forms and pay stubs from Modern Era Investment Corp, which, as an aside, when I first wrote read Modern Era, I wrote Moderna.
Moderna.
Yeah. Modern Era, like, put together as Moderna. And I was like, oh, weird.
So wait, is that a real company at all? I mean, not Moderna. I mean, Modern Era. Is that, or did they make it up totally?
I don't know if they totally made it up or if they, like, maybe had a friend that, like, sent a pay stub in or something. Do you want to look?
Oh, yeah, I guess I should.
I should have looked, but I was so stuck on Moderna.
Wait, you think that's what Moderna means? Like, do you think Modern that's how they got the name? Yeah.
Actually, yeah.
We had trivia last night, and I just learned that, you know, like the Cisco phones, like the Cisco company, yeah, that's an abbreviation of San Francisco because that's where the company was formed. I had no idea.
I got chills for some reason. Full body chills.
Like, they just, it was like it had a much longer name. And then they're like, well, why don't we just Cisco. Call it, like, it was like San Francisco something, blah, blah, blah. And they're like, let's just call it Cisco. I had no idea.
That's so cool. I didn't know that either.
So wait, it's Modern Era?
Era Investment Corp.
There's a Modern Era Investment Inc. in Sugar Land, Texas. But everything else that's coming up is Teresa and Joe articles.
So who knows? Maybe they made it up or maybe it was real. Regardless, she wasn't working for them. And somehow they had fake W-2 forms, fake pay stubs. And she herself got a loan for, based on that application, for $121,500.
Wow.
And she mailed that application materials, and that's the mail fraud. Wow. Another one she got, they listed her as an employee of Joe's stucco company for the past 7 years. And they said that she made a monthly salary of $14,750. And based on that application, she got a mortgage loan of $20,200. Here are some crazier ones. They falsified W-2s and pay stubs again to get an $800,000 construction loan.
Wow.
They did the same thing to another bank and got a $1.7 million construction loan. And so that's why they were being charged with bank fraud, because they knowingly executed or attempted to execute a scheme or artifice to defraud a financial institution. And so they defrauded multiple financial institutions. They list 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. So it's for amounts of like $800,000, $250,000, $170,000, $1.7 million, and another $1.7 million. I didn't realize how much they were getting in these loans.
Yeah.
That's a lot of money. So is a bank like, remember Wachovia?
Yeah.
Bank? Yeah. So they like defrauded them. I guess there was a Park Avenue bank. Yeah.
That's, so they did it over and over again and got away with it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then despite getting all of those loans, they still had to file for bankruptcy. And he still filed the fraudulent release of the mortgage and didn't pay his buddy that he was like in business with, the master poet or whatever.
Yeah. Well, I guess like all their money went to tacky furniture, as we saw on the show. Like, clearly that wasn't going where it should have been.
That's the height of the like Tuscan. It's like everybody's house in that time period and like slightly before. It's like they all had like the Tuscan kitchens, and it's so like I am following these TikTok accounts on home decor, and there's like this one girl. She's like, I live in like early 2000s Tuscan hell, and she's. Showing her parents, I was like, every time I come home, and it's like that awful, it's like the leather, and then like the, why did everyone have like fruit paintings and the that yellow tan? I'm older than you, but you remember.
I remember that.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it was also this like, they wanted it to look very Renaissance at the same time. So it was like Tuscan with like really ornate Renaissance looking Victorian, not Victorian. Renaissance is before Victorian. And I don't know why I feel like Teresa is one of the type of people that would have. Do you remember those foot chairs that look like it was like a high heel chair?
Yes.
Yeah.
I feel they like also she probably have those in one. Strip clubs. They are very, people are very like, strip clubs are really into the like high heel chair. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I guess that's where the money went. But
yeah, I remember her decorating that house, and it's like, also, there's There is a website called McMansion Hell.
Mm-hmm.
Have you seen this?
Mm-hmm,
and they have Teresa's house on there. And they, it is, I highly recommend that if you just need to be entertained or go down a rabbit hole. I actually have fond memories of Teresa's house because I enjoyed the family interactions in Nano and but it's definitely the Tuscan Renaissance.
Well, okay. Something I want to mention, because we talked about this when we talked about the Erica stuff and how attorneys don't make that much money, not enough money to be flying out on two different private planes, spending $30,000 a month on glam and everything else. How did she think that her husband was funding this stuff? You know, if she's claiming innocence or ignorance, where did she think they were getting the money?
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
All right. You know what I don't miss at all? Period. Pain, the cravings, just the moodiness. Trust me, I get that. And so I want to talk to you about a product called EstoControl. It's a formula developed by Happy Mammoth, which is a supplement company dedicated to making women's lives easier. EstoControl contains science-backed herbal extracts that help support hormonal health, especially in women who suffer from PMS. So for a limited time, you can get 15% off your entire order at happymammoth.com. Just use the code DOCKIT at checkout. Happy Mammoth also has the Bloat Banisher, which I've been trying, and it helps just make my tummy feel a little bit better throughout the day, especially when I'm just having really bad snacks or I'm stressing out. It's nice to have something I can reach to that helps me out a little bit. But again, for a limited time, you can get 15% off your entire first order at happymammoth.com. Just use the code DOCKIT at checkout. That's DOCKET. Dock it at checkout. But because we're lawyers, we do want to remind you that these statements have not been evaluated by the FDA. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease. But yeah, go check out Happy Mammoth. I've enjoyed it, and I'm sure you will too.
I don't know. Going back, because we talked about in part one, this is right when they were getting all these loans during the time right before the financial crisis hit. So it was very, so many people were living above and beyond their means. And when that financial crisis hit in 2008 and the housing market just totally went to hell, I feel like there was a lot, there were a lot of people living well beyond their means. And especially because the banks were literally just giving out loans so easily to people that couldn't afford them. Again, watch The Big Short. It explains all of this in a super compelling, entertaining way. But I don't think she was asking questions, and I don't think she wanted to know. And I think she assumed there's probably some shenanigans, but that it wasn't. I mean, if you had asked Teresa Giudice what wire fraud was in
or mail fraud.
Or mail fraud was in 2006, she's gonna be like, what the hell are you talking about? I'm already bored,
Right.
So
I guess going back to the indictment as well, it is interesting how long it is when you compare it to Jen Shah's, even though Jen Shah is at the top of a horrific scheme. She's not being charged with as many things as Teresa and Joe were charged with. I think the indictment was 33 pages, whereas Jen Shah's was 2 pages and I think 2 charges. So it's just wild how much they did.
Yeah.
It's also because each loan was a separate count.
There was just so many specific instances of fraud that their indictment they filed for bankruptcy, filed the fraudulent documents in the bankruptcy, then committed additional fraud in the bankruptcy. And so there was just so much to put in. I mean, there's just so much there. And because there were like, and they alleged different conspiracies for like Jen's, it was like one ongoing conspiracy. So that was like part of like the whole like transaction of events. It was like one big conspiracy to do all of these things. Whereas because there are so many different, they did this. So I think like, you know, every mortgage application, like there is a conspiracy to do that. There's the conspiracy to, you know, be fraudulent in the bankruptcy filings. There's so many different specific instances that they served up on a platter for the federal government that it had to be longer.
Right. Yeah.
They just kept doing it.
Loan application fraud, bankruptcy fraud. I didn't even realize bankruptcy fraud was a thing, but this is a pretty clear example of it, in my opinion.
That's the thing Erica Jayne is going to have to be incredibly careful of, because she's got people just waiting for her to make a mistake to get her on.
Does it matter, though, that something. She didn't file for bankruptcy?
No, I mean, you still, even if it's an adversary bankruptcy petition, it's like you still can't lie to.
Yeah, true.
The federal
court. It's still
court.
Bankruptcy fraud. Yeah.
Like if you're like, if especially, and I think they probably, even in normal circumstances, when it's an involuntary bankruptcy petition that one of your creditors filed against you, I think in those instances, and our bankruptcy friends out there can correct me if I'm wrong, it's probably would be seemingly more, if you didn't voluntarily go into bankruptcy and say, yes, I have all this stuff, I made mistakes, I need like the bankruptcy court to sort this out. If someone else, if your creditor's pushing you in there because you're not paying them, then it would seem like the likelihood that you would be fraudulent would be greater. Because you don't even want to be there. It wasn't your choice. Not that anybody wants to be in bankruptcy, but you know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that's another thing. Sorry, I keep going on tangents, but
I like
the fact
tangents.
That like they filed for bankruptcy here. It wasn't involuntary. They decided to do it. They needed this process to help them out, and they still lied. Like, I don't know. I don't know what I'm trying to say, but it just makes it that much worse to me. Like, based on what you just said, it's like they were seeking this help that our country affords us via bankruptcy, and they still couldn't be honest.
I mean, like, okay, when I had my own firm, and I fortunately had a lot of clients where I had, like, good defense work. You know, I represented commercial property owners, railroads, whatever. But I very much enjoyed taking the occasional plaintiff's case. And those were always some of my favorite cases. But I turned down almost 99% of cases. And some of it was because, okay, I don't think you have a viable claim. But some of it was because I caught you lying to me already. And it's like when you are taking on a plaintiff's case, you're investing so much time and money and energy into it, and then you're not going to get paid unless you win. And it's like, I would do so much research on the clients that came into me because I'm like, I have to make sure they're not lying to me. Now, the bankruptcy attorney here is getting paid by the hour. But I would still, it's like that habit still sticks. I don't know. I feel like that habit would still stick with you. It's like, I need to make sure that they're not just like protecting people from themselves. So it's like if people come in and they're handing you these documents, like, and I'm jumping ahead, but I'm just going to mention it now. One of the things on the legal malpractice complaint that is pointed out is that.
And that's the one Teresa filed against her bankruptcy attorney.
Against her bankruptcy attorney is that he didn't even put down that they had any vehicles, and they live in New Jersey where you can't get around without a car. It seems like a big omission. Now, again, I'm not judging this bankruptcy attorney, but I am saying that seems like someone's coming to you and saying, we're going to file documents in federal court asking for like help from our creditors, and we have to be honest about it. And they don't admit to having any, like, they don't list any cars as assets, and you live in New Jersey. That's a little odd. Like, you can't get anywhere in Jersey without a car.
Yeah, unless they, like, had it on loan.
But you still, it's still, like, if even if you're leasing a car, that's still a debt that you, like, you still have to list that.
Oh, yeah, that would be a debt. Yeah. Oh, yeah, because they listed it as a debt. It would, Yeah, it wasn't an asset. Yeah.
But and like, and even if you don't owe money on the car and you own it outright, that's still that like that's be. A possession. Yeah, that's a possession. So it.
Yeah, I mean, they probably even drove to the appointment to see him.
Yeah,
he still didn't know that they had a car.
Okay, so just going back to Teresa a little bit. So Teresa, this is from her book. So we're at the point to where they've been indicted. That was shown on the Real Housewives of New Jersey. Wasn't that in like the worst season? No,
yeah. I think
No, with the twins.
It was because you told me to start watching season five. I watched season one and two, and then I jumped over to season five, and it is the worst thing I've ever seen, and I cannot watch it. I'm not doing it.
It's
I'm
so
sorry.
Bad, and I actually like forgot that like I blocked that out of my head when I told you the indictment's like on season five, so you have to go watch that, and it is like the worst season.
It's terrible.
The twins are insufferable.
And then like, I cannot do this. I cannot. I'm not watching it.
Isn't that also the season where there's that fight in the basement where they're all dressed up like firemen or police officers or whatever? Yeah, and there's hair pulling. And then like that, the Marchese people are, oh God, they're the worst.
Terrible.
They're probably like my least favorite casting decision be on. When she like calls Teresa from like outside her church and she's like, I'm just so worried about you. I'm like, whatever Teresa says to her, she deserves it.
I have not gone that far, and I never will see that scene. So it's watching it.
You've brought all of these horrible memories back up to my brain. So now they're there, and I can't, like, get that time back in my life. So sorry about that. But
yeah, but that is when it comes out. And it actually was interesting to watch, like, how they handled it and, like, what happened after that. So, yeah.
Yeah.
That was entertaining.
Yeah. I mean, Teresa's has always been very prideful. I mean, that's how like the whole table flipping incident happened. She's like, don't tell me, you know, not to talk or that I'm stupid. Don't tell me. And so having to have that happen to you while you're on TV and everyone knows and everyone's talking about you must have just been incredibly difficult. Also, she talks about in her book, Turning the Tables, that's the name of the book that I downloaded, that her deals with Costco and BJ's. What's BJ's? Is that like, that's obviously an East Coast something or other.
Yeah, it's like a restaurant. It's a restaurant. Like when you want to buy restaurant quality stuff, you go to BJ's.
Oh, okay.
It's kind of like I think it's, I never actually went into one because I only saw it when I was in law school and I wasn't in the market for anything like that.
You were in the market for like, food.
No, I was in the market for food, but I think it's like bulk stuff nice glassware and stuff like that. But it's funny because on the West Coast, there's like or maybe in other places too, there's the BJ's restaurant. Like the, I don't know, have you been there?
No.
Maybe that's just a California thing then, which is like pizza and beer and like wings, but it's like kind of nicer.
I don't know.
So I don't know. Maybe people can like DM us and let us know what your BJ's is, but maybe not.
Wait, what did you just ask for? Like, don't, we don't want that,
no,
listeners.
No,
we don't.
Never mind. I guess is your BJ's the wholesale restaurant place or is it the BJ's restaurant? I don't want to know about any other BJ's.
Yeah, no, we don't. Anyway, Teresa says in her book that when after the indictment that her deals with Costco and BJ's to sell her dessert line and specialty food line were put on pause because they wanted to see what would happen. And that Home Shopping Network was supposed to sell her hair care line, but told her it wasn't a good time and that no new liquor stores would carry her Fabellini drink, which again, I tried to find that and have a case of it sent to you, but I can't find it. And I'm not sure what it was. I think like a Bellini type thing. I don't know. But that actually is pretty tragic because I remember liking, like we talked about in part one, that the scenes of her cooking with her Italian family and like the big, you know, vats of tomato sauce and little girls helping was very like endearing. And that her, you know, she obviously, I think we can all agree the New Jersey ladies can all cook. Like I would go eat at their house anytime. I would not bring sprinkle cookies, but I would go eat at their house. Because I think that would have been really good for her. She really would have made, it would have been, I think she would have been actually successful with those things and not necessarily with the Fabellini drink or whatever, but I think the book, like the cookbook and the dessert line, probably would have done well.
Yeah, and she could have used the money.
Yeah. And then maybe they wouldn't have had to, like, get fraudulent loans anymore.
Right.
So that all goes away. And then – so they continue to film season six while the charges are pending. And then in August 2013, that's when they plead not guilty in federal court. Oh, and just a side note, Teresa mentions this in her book, that at one point the trial was set for Valentine's Day. And I will say, in Teresa's book, she is incredibly complimentary towards Joe this whole time. Like, even as the indictment is pending, it was – even though we saw him on TV calling her the C word, and she is incredibly – she's effusive in her praise for Joe, and that he's a good dad, and that she loved him, and he was strong, and just – like, there is no – there's not even a hint of resentment in her book that, like, when she's talking about, like, these things happening in this sequence of events, that she is mad at Joe or furious that he didn't tell her, or mad that he signed her name to things or anything. Like, there's – it's not there at all, which I thought was interesting, because not once does she bring that up, which also made me wonder, like, maybe she did know, like, you know?
Yeah. Like,
I mean, I don't think she knew, like, what the crimes actually were, but I think maybe she was complicit in saying, like, yeah, let's file this stuff or whatever, like, you know?
Yeah, maybe. I guess it just seems different from what she says in her pretrial motions, but.
Yeah, So August 14, 2013, that's when they plead not guilty in federal court. And we see that on TV as well. Then November 18th, the first superseding indictment is returned. And Ceci, I'm right. That's like basically like an amended complaint in a civil case, right?
Mm-hmm. Right.
So again, I'm just – the superseding indictment adds a couple charges and goes into detail. But it also – it says they repeatedly concealed assets during the bankruptcy, made false oaths, which is fancy lawyer speak for lying to your face, and made false declarations. They intentionally, you know, failed to disclose their ownership of certain income-producing properties. And in many instances, these properties, which I thought was interesting. So, like, they file, like, false documents in order to get the mortgages. And then they get the mortgages, they buy income-producing property, and then they failed to declare the income from the property in the bankruptcy.
So it's like multiple layers of bad.
Yeah. And then they also charged Joe with the willful failure to file tax returns from 2004 to 2008. So January and February 2014, pretrial motions are filed requesting several things. Some of this stuff is very, very similar to what we talked about in our Jin Shah pretrial motion episode. So we're not going to go over the repeat stuff because it's literally the same type of thing. But they also had some really interesting additional details. So one of the things in the pretrial motions that they wanted – like, obviously, Teresa and Joe.
But it was just Teresa, right?
Or no? No, they were both.
They filed this one together?
Yeah, they filed the two separate motions, one for Teresa and one for Joe, but a lot of it was repetitive with both defendants asking for the same thing. So one of the things that was in both motions was wanting the trial to be severed. So Teresa and Joe were asking that they be tried separately. The government doesn't really like to do that in a case like this where they're alleging a conspiracy. So the charges are a conspiracy between these two people. It's the same time frame, the same sequence of events, the same facts, the same signatures, the same documents, the same exhibits. Yeah. It's all the same thing. And so that is – the government considers that a waste of the court's time and a waste of money and resources to have two separate trials where you basically be repeating the same things over and over again. But one of the things that Teresa is arguing is that she wants to maintain her right not to testify against her husband, which is the spousal privilege that you have while you're married, to testify, like to refuse to testify to crime that you witnessed your husband committing or your wife committing. Anybody can commit crimes. and that she wants to, like, if they're in the same trial, that she's going to have to testify against him while she's also trying to defend herself. So she's asking for that. And then she's also...
Wait, and is that because the spousal privilege goes away if you're tried together?
Well, if what she's saying, like, so let's say they did Joe's trial first, and this is what I think they were wanting. So they wanted to do Joe's trial first. Teresa would invoke her privilege against personal self-incrimination and then also invoke the spousal privilege so that she wouldn't have to testify against her husband. And then Joe would, and I think it's kind of clear from reading the motions that Joe didn't really have much of a defense. He'd already admitted to a lot of things and incriminated himself. And there just isn't, when you, there's completely fake documents that are being submitted. Like, the, Joe didn't have much of a defense. So I think what their goal was to get Teresa completely out of it as much as possible, for her to invoke those privileges, Joe to probably plea, and then for Teresa to have a trial, maybe, where Joe could actually take the stand and defend her, because he didn't have to worry about incriminating himself, because he would be, you know, they just bring him in as a witness from jail and he would testify.
Got it. Yeah. So if it was all done together, then they couldn't.
They can't do that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right.
Obviously, the government did not agree with this plan.
Right. Yeah.
The government's like, first of all, we're not like doubling the expenses by separating trials just so that Teresa can get away with whatever that, like, they had no interest in doing that.
Mm-hmm.
One of the things that I thought was really compelling was that Joe had at least said that he intended to testify that Teresa didn't have involvement in several things, and it's listed out. I just need to find this in the document here. So Joe was going to provide exculpatory testimony for Teresa, and exculpatory is just like Joe's going to say, hey, she's not guilty. Like, that's pretty much just what that means, of these particular things, or the provide testimony that makes it her less likely to be found guilty. So Joe had a declaration where he said that he would testify that Teresa had no knowledge of any misrepresentation on loan applications, mortgage applications, or lines of credit, that Teresa was not aware that various properties were acquired in her name. So if that's true, that's pretty bad. Like, he's just signing mortgages in Teresa's name, and she didn't know. That Teresa was not aware that various businesses were owned in her name, which, okay, that could be true. But she definitely knew about, like, the TG Fabulicious LLC, and she knew she was writing a cookbook, and she knew that.
Right.
That Teresa didn't know that Joe's business partner, Joe Mastropoli, signed Teresa's name on numerous occasions without her knowledge or authorization. That Joe's attorney, Fred, I'm not going to say his last name, signed Teresa's name on numerous occasions without her knowledge or authorization. And that other individuals, including bank representatives, were aware that Teresa had not signed various documents, including loan applications, mortgage applications, lines of credit, and so on. According to these court documents and Joe's declarations, which is just like a formal written statement, Joe was intending to take the stand in Teresa's trial and say, I signed her name and stuff, she didn't know, so on and so forth. And I'm sure that Joe did not want Teresa to go to jail, that he wanted her at home with the kids, that he felt bad. And I am also sure that Joe did frequently sign Teresa's name to things that she didn't know about. Don't you think? Like, he did?
He even said that there was a lender that would notarize it, even though he signed for her, which we've talked about, like, the importance of, like, having it notarized. So,
yeah. Mary Cosby episode went all the way up to the Utah Supreme Court. Like, you can't. Right. A notary has one job, and that's to witness a signature. And to witness a signature, you actually have to see the person signing that they're signing. Like, and then that's literally all a notary is doing, is saying, like, I am a live witness that will testify under the penalty of perjury that I saw this person Because, like, literally, like, the little notary stamps is, like, I hereby certify that I personally witnessed the signature of blah, 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 whoever on this date in this location. That's the only, like, the notary is not saying that anything in the document is true. The notary isn't saying that anything in the document is legal or not legal. The notary has one job, and that is to witness the signature. So, like, if someone's like, oh, I'll just have this notarized for you later. No, that's not okay. that's not okay. And a notary should not do that. And I haven't worked with a single notary, like, that didn't take that very seriously. So I know they're out there. Oh, but I just remembered this. In the civil case that Mastropoli filed, Joe Giudice had stolen the notary's, there were court records saying, like, he had taken the notary's, like, stamp.
Oh, yeah.
Like, I remember that now. And some of them were, like, some of the notary stamps, this is totally an ADHD aside, but, like, are really cool. Like, they're actually, like, press in, like, so they create, like, the actual, like, embossed paper. I always thought those were cool.
But you could get that for, like, your own stationery.
For all of my written correspondence, which actually I do send. You know what? I'm going to order myself one because I think they're really cool. Not a notary stamp. I'm not going to fake be a notary. I'm just going to get, like, a cool embossed signature thing. That's what I'm talking about.
Yeah, you should get one. I think they're really cool as well, like the little pressy things. I think the really cool ones are the ones where it's, like, the wax.
Oh, yeah.
From, like, old times.
Yeah.
You, like, put the wax and then you, like, stamp it in there. You should get one of those.
I'm going to get one of those, too. And then people are going to get correspondence from me that's like a text message just because I want to use my waxing and be like, hey, what's up? Smiley face.
Yeah.
Like, I support it. Sending me these things that are not necessary.
Maybe I just won't send you my new address. I'm just kidding.
Bitch, I'll find it. You can't hide.
Yeah.
Okay, that was a notary digression.
Yeah, so I guess essentially it's like Joe is saying that she didn't sign anything. And I remember, because I wasn't watching this stuff in real time, people were like, is it true that she signed, or it didn't matter whether she signed? And there was, like, it sounded like there was a specific document that people thought that was at the crux of the case. I don't know if you remember that.
I think people seized on, like, one or two particular, but, like, there's so many documents here. And because, like, if, like, we talked about, like, the indictment was so long because there's so many instances, and she did sign some of them. Like, he wasn't signing all of her signatures for her. Like, so I think, I can't remember exactly. I have a vague memory of that as well, but there's so many documents, and she did sign some of them. And
it also, but, like, doesn't even matter because that wasn't the only thing going on. It wasn't only the loan applications that got them into hot water. It was, like, the tax returns, the bankruptcy fraud, everything else that we listed out from the indictment. So it almost doesn't matter.
Yeah. But I do think that this, I want to bring this up because Teresa could have, just in order to get herself out of trouble, she could have taken the stand and testify. Like I said, I'll testify against Joe. I will waive that spousal privilege. I will testify against him. I'm mad. I didn't do any of this. I had no idea what was going on. And there is no indication that she ever even thought that that was something that she would do. And I would say that that's also consistent with her personality and what we saw on the show. Like, she was not going to testify against the father of her children. And Joe may not have always been an ideal husband to her, but she definitely did love him. Like, I think that was, I mean, is that the feeling you got from watching them? Like,
Yeah. They seemed like so in love to me until I watched that clip where he calls her a C word and a bitch. And
the C word that's not charming.
He also called her the R word, which I thought was the worst thing.
The R word?
Yeah. Like,
what does it rhyme with? Why can't I think of an insult that starts with an R? Ratchet?
It's like, it used to mean, like, very unintelligent.
Oh, he did?
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah. It didn't used to mean that. People used to use it for
which
is so inappropriate.
Okay.
But, yeah.
I mean, yeah. I'm like, Ratchet? Did he call her Ratchet? Ratchet.
You ratchet bitch C word. That was
I
it.
I mean, Yeah. I would probably laugh so, like, how he'd have to say it, like, his accent, like.
Yeah. Ratchet.
Okay, now I'm totally, like, lost here. Wait. All right. So, okay, I was talking about the how Teresa never even appeared to consider it an option to testify against Joe. And I do think that, especially, like, now that we've seen this, and even though they're divorced, they still appear to be friendly and have as much of a good relationship as they can. And they've been through so much together. And it is the father of her children. And like, I respect that. Like, as like a human, if I was her attorney, I probably wouldn't feel that way. But like, as a human being, I respect that she did not want to testify against her husband, and that she didn't even appear to consider that to be an option. But it also makes me wonder if she was also like more complicit than she's letting on.
Yeah, maybe.
But the government, we don't know. Like, so this brief was filed, the pretrial motions were filed, the government filed a response giving some very thought out and then also well-researched reasons why it would not be – severance would be inappropriate. They filed a reply. It was never ruled on because in March 4th, 2014, Teresa and Joe enter a guilty plea. And in her book, Teresa specifically says that their attorney told them they need to accept a plea deal ASAP. So they obviously listened to their attorney on that. So – March 4th, 2014, Teresa and Joe enter the guilty plea. That was also very widely publicized. And we watch these sequences of events unfold on TV. In the next episode, we are going to go into exactly what they pled to. We're going to explain the reasons why the court, in some circumstances, will let defendants serve their time, like Teresa and Joe did, where the kids had one parent home, because that isn't super common, but it does happen in other circumstances, even with non-famous people. And we're going to go into a lot of details that I thought were fascinating about Teresa's time in jail. Also, the immigration issues with Joe and his deportation, the divorce, the legal malpractice. This sounds like a lot, but we're gonna wrap it up in the next episode. Oh, we also have the listener questions. All right. So we posted a thing on our Instagram asking for our listener questions in one of our Insta stories, and we got a lot. And some of y'all posted some shady questions, which were funny, and we'll get to those at the very end of the next episode. But there were, we're going to go through some of them that I believe that we have answered in this episode. So one, did Trey know or did Joe screw her over? Katie O'Neill 7. I think you kind of have to come to your own conclusions from what we've talked about in this episode, but I'm going to ask you, Ceci, what is your opinion?
It's hard to say. I think she knew part of it. I don't think she knew all of it. I would say maybe she knew once the bankruptcy was filed and stuff with like the fraudulent tax returns and maybe the loans that she herself was named on. So like the ones, like I mentioned, where she had false, fake business or employment documents. I think maybe she knew those, but not everything.
So I think that she knew that everything wasn't like totally legal, but I do not think she knew everything that was going on. And I don't think she knew the seriousness of what was happening. I think in her head, she's like, well, if we get the loans and we pay them back, why does it matter? Or, you know, like, and I do sometimes go into Joe's office and move paperwork around, or like, I think she rationalized a lot of it, but I don't think she had any idea of like the actual scope and seriousness of what they were doing was. Now, I don't think Joe knew that either, but Joe definitely knew he was lying about about all these things. Miriam S. also asked, did Teresa know? Megan asked, do you think Teresa knew he was committing tax fraud or bankruptcy fraud? I mean, like, I do the tax returns for John and I, and like, But John still looks at, like, John looks, I mean.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, it's like, so I don't know. So I think we've answered those the best that we can. Was Teresa aware that Joe's committing fraud? Again, same question. I do think she knew he was being fraudulent, but I don't think he knew. She knew, like, specifically what that was. What was the evidence against Teresa? I would say the documents that she signed, because she definitely did sign several documents. Right. She didn't sign all of them. She definitely signed some.
Right. And she not only the loan documents, like, yeah, also the bankruptcy disclosures. Oh.
I think I remember the document that everybody was, like, talking about, because I think it was the W-2s, where it was, like, the fake jobs. So she knew she wasn't doing those jobs. Like, she knew she wasn't getting paid for those jobs. She knew that, I think, for sure. All right. So we have a lot of other fan questions, but they're almost all over the stuff that we're going to cover in the next episode. So we will cover that then.
So thank you for tuning in. And until next time.
Bye, guys.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Want to join a film club that has real frank discussions talking about films that you actually want to watch?
Well, then look no further, because we are Frank Film Club with me, Maisie Williams. And each week we watch a film and then come together and obsess over it, or sometimes absolutely slate it. Either way, there's always a lot to say. And the films that we pick range all the way from, like, 90s and noughties classics all the way up to new releases that are coming out every single week. And sometimes we get our listeners to pick for us.
And we all work in the film industry, don't we, ladies?
Indeed.
So we really love to look at specifically how a film was made.
So if this sounds like your bag, then come and have a listen to Frank Film Club. And remember, absolutely everyone is welcome in this club.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.
The Bravo Docket is part of the Acast Creator Network.